He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
To infinity and beyond!
No crying! There's no crying in baseball!
My precious!
Good morning, Vietnam!
Your milkshake!
This is Sparta!
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Welcome to Know Your Cinema.
Hello, and welcome back to Know Your Cinema, your favorite movie podcast. I'm your host, Jason Quinn, and with me, as always, is the King of the Ring, Devlin Clemens.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for another week of a wonderful Know Your Cinema podcast movie review.
This week, we are reviewing the football classic, if you will, Gridiron Gang, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Exhibit. Dev, this is a movie you've never seen, so I will I'll let you take the floor on this one. You know, let's just hop into this. I've been dying to hear your thoughts on it. So.
Sure. So first perspective of this film going like 20 minutes into it is it's like a juvenile longest yard. Kind of has that feel to it. Really, it actually at its core is a really good movie. It's based on a true story, which is even better when you start watching a movie and then you realize that it's based on a true story and there are factual characters involved, and that there were grown men who wanted to really help these inner city kids be better and become better men and develop into
not just repeat offenders.
Yeah, just not repeat offenders, not wanting to see their faces and to see that they cared and that someone cared about them for the first time maybe in their lives. And super cool to see that it was based on a true story. So that was awesome. I didn't know that going into that it was really, kind of, it's fictional, but it's factual as well. So it's a good movie. I won't sit here and deny that it's a good movie. I'm not gonna do that. It's a very good movie. I don't know why it's got such low ratings on most of the places that I looked it up. It's a very feel-good movie. It makes you appreciate certain things, and it makes you appreciate the good in people, and seeing the kids grow and become better, and also at the same time having the people who run the establishment that they were the Kirkpatrick or the Kilpatrick or whatever it was called, the facility, Camp Kilpatrick or whatever it was, seeing them actually grow as human beings as well, and with different colored lenses on, it's a good movie. It's sometimes emotional watching it as well, because you feel for some of these kids and what they go through and understanding, and it brings a different dynamic to it. Like, I was kind of thrown off at the beginning of the movie because I didn't know what route this was going to take, with the initial couple opening scenes with the one kid who gets thrown in the hole and then, gets out. And then we see kind of like the scene where he's back in his neighborhood, and I was like, well, where's this going? Like, how do we go from there to here? But I get it. It's laying groundwork. It's telling a story. And there's more than one character, but it all kind of circles back around to that particular moment in time. So it's good storytelling from where everything kind of comes full circle and things change. It's got a good cast. I'm glad Exhibit only had like 7 lines in this whole movie, because it was just you can just tell he's just kind of not a seasoned actor. I mean, even The Rock was still kind of new to the acting role, but being in wrestling and being able to be kind of physical and do some of the things and know how to use his facial expressions to garnish a scene is an advantage for him. Exhibit, I think, just, you know, I think if he stuck with it, he might be a better actor. I think that he just, you know, he, you know, got a few roles and was kind of stuck in these bit parts. But, you know, they used a lot of young up and coming actors in Hollywood to be in this movie. There wasn't any real big names. There was familiar faces as far as like some of the adult actors, but there wasn't anybody that you could go and be like, oh yeah, I remember them, like the little kids or anything like that. The lady that was The Rock's mom, she was the lady in Dutch. Do you remember in Dutch when the kid is at the shelter and he's talking to the lady of the shelter? That's the same person who played The Rock's mom. I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but I immediately recognized her. I was like, because she's a very distinct voice in how she talks. She's almost poetic in how she's very slow in delivering her lines, but she was very, I enjoyed seeing her in the movie as well. But yeah, overall, this movie was really good. It surprised me more than anything else. I mean, there are bits and pieces of this movie that, you know, of course, being a movie review podcast that, you know, I'm going to talk about later on, but yeah, overall, really good movie, solid flick. It caught me in the feels a couple of times. It's super long though for what it is. It's about 2 hours long from start to finish. So they gave it enough time to tell a good story. I think it was needed for the movie itself. And I mean, it felt like two hours. It didn't just fly by, like, because of what they were doing within the framework of the movie. It needed to have that much time. I think if they shortened it, it would have felt less. And like I said, I don't know why, you know, I go on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and I'm looking at some of these reviews and people are just hammering this movie to death. And I'm like, I don't know why. It's you're trying to look too hard into this movie and not see it for what it is. And being furthermore a true story or based off a true story, it's you can't put verbatim what happened in real life right there in front of the camera. You can only take, you know, the cliff notes that you get or the news story that they put at the end of the movie. You can only get so much in going back and maybe talking to some of these kids that were there and maybe some of the faculty and whoever, and maybe get bits and pieces here. You can only dice together so much. So you got to kind of use your imagination. So like I said, I don't know why people are giving this movie such a hard time. I mean, it's like low 6, I think, on IMDb. It's like 6.1 or something like that.
The only thing I can think of is because all that stuff at the end of the movie is actual scenes from a documentary called Gridiron Game that came out in the like early 90s. And the only thing that I could possibly think of that would be a reason for giving it low scores is if the documentary, because I've never seen the documentary.
Neither have I.
Not saying that I wouldn't watch it. It'd definitely be something that I'd be interested in. But I've never gotten a chance to. And the only thing that I could possibly think of is if the documentary shows a completely different story or if they've added so much to it that makes it not like the original story. But from what I saw, it looked like they put a lot of like damn near verbatim stuff in the movie, especially with like some of the lines were coming directly from shit that the coach was saying. Yeah. You know what I mean? So for me, I was like, you know, like when usually when you see, oh, it's on a based on a true story or whatever, you know, it's like, how much is it really based on a
correct
true
story?
But with this, seeing as they had like a really strong framework to work off of, and they even had lines and stuff that they could legitimately quote, I was that to me made the movie a lot more interesting, and it made it hit a lot harder, you know.
So. Yeah, and like I said, I think that I love real life stories. I love historical real life stories when they come to life and you can see it for yourself. And I love to see stories that I would never actually, think about. And it's another reason why I love documentaries so much. I love history. I love seeing stories from that perspective, because they're real. And sometimes when you read a story or you see a documentary and you're like, God, that person was so brave, or that person was so, you know, tough, or God, he went through so much, you know, it's really awesome to feel that way about a movie, and to understand, you know, these kids. You know, I lived a tough life being poor. Nothing to what these kids have to go through. Nothing to that nature at all. But you know, I lived a tough life growing up. You know, we were really, really poor. And you know, I tell people how poor we were. You know, having a coal burning stove in your house in the 1980s. That's friggin' poor. I mean, we didn't have central air. We didn't have a furnace. We had a coal burning stove. You know, these kids, this is life and death for these kids out there in the street during that time. And this was, well, we're talking what, mid-80s when all this went, you know, when this factual thing happened. Mid to late 80s. Like, that was a tough time to live in LA or in Southern California, because the gangs were so rampant back then. And, you know, to bring it to the public eye, this is like a film that, like, you should show kids. Like, you should, like,
yeah, I showed all my kids this movie.
Yeah, you should show every kid, like, ever. Like, I mean, this is stuff that can happen to you if you make the wrong choices, or if you get in a situation where you feel like you can't make the right choice, you should make the right choice. You know, you can make the right choice. You can better yourself. There's always a way out. You know, I take it kind of from my perspective of, like, I could have stayed in Southern Ohio. I could have lived down there, but would I have been better off than moving to Columbus when I was 18, 20 years ago? I don't know. I mean, you just don't know. All I know is that I bettered myself by not staying down there and living down there, and not saying that there's anything against that, but you know, you got to think of it. Jobs are scarce down there. Work is scarce down there. Where I'm from, it's the second poorest county in the state of Ohio. So it's really interesting to see different perspectives on how people live and what other people go through. Because, you know, like I said, I didn't live as tough a life as these young kids portrayed in this movie and in the real life scenario. But, you know, I can relate to some of that, what they've gone through. Especially the scene with the abusive boyfriend or husband, the very short scene. I just was like, how did he end up in jail? Like, it had to have been the gun. It had to have been like a stolen gun or something, because he is literally defending his mom. Like,
yeah,
I was sitting there. I'm like, they put him in jail for that? Like, man should have got a medal. She got a medal pinned on him.
Right. No, I think it definitely had to have probably been the guns or gang affiliations or what, you know, some of the other things that were going
probation,
on.
Whatever he might have been on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in my opinion, I was like, fuck yeah, get that motherfucker. Like, I was like, that's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Like, I'm cheering him on. Like, shoot right. That motherfucker again for me.
It's going to sound sick, but I was like, he shot him three times. He didn't just shoot him once. He shot him three times. okay. Like, he was making sure that fucker was dead. He wasn't getting back up. So, yeah. Yeah, there's just there's a lot to intake in this movie. And again, like I said, it can draw at your heartstrings. It can really, but it also makes you think. And that's really what's good about a movie sometimes, is that we do a lot of comedies on here. We do a lot of sci-fi. And every once in a while, we'll drop in something that makes you really think and makes you, you know, it gets at your heartstrings. And, you know, this is one of them. I felt like this was kind of like, you know, it kind of has like a throwback to like, you know, The Longest Yard. You know, there's triumph and tragedy in The Longest Yard too, in both the original and the subsequent remake. And this, you know, this was the real life, Longest Yard. And again, like I said, really good movie. And I recommend anybody that's never seen Gridiron Gang, go watch it. It will give you a good perspective. It's not life changing. It's not going to, you know, change your life in any way, shape or form, but it's a really like movie that you're going to appreciate when you get done watching it.
I think like, I don't know that it's necessarily not life changing for some people in
groups.
For sure. Because like when I watched it with my kids, because I knew the movie, I had already seen it. So I took the opportunity to sit down and watch it with the kids. And there's a lot of graphic things that happen in the movie, but I explained it to them. I said, you know, this is the life that people still to this day, there are still people that live this same type of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I said that, you know, I wanted them to understand and appreciate the things that they had, because I'm not saying that I'm not fucking Warren Buffett or giving them, you know, the world's greatest life, but they've got it a lot better than some kids, and a good portion of kids, I would say, they have it a lot better than. So I wanted them to kind of see and appreciate. So when they, you know, when I hear that, oh, you don't care about us and you hate us, you know, bullshit that my kids want to say all the time, because they're kids and that's the type of shit kids say.
Yeah.
I wanted to put some perspective and show them like, you don't fucking have it that bad. Like when I send you to the wall, I'm not the worst dad ever, and taking away your Nerf gun, that doesn't make me a huge piece of shit. Like, it, you know, you're
that definitely it. Makes you a huge piece of shit.
Yeah.
Take away the Nerf gun.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. but like, I wanted them to see like, sure, that there is this is a reality for people. And I wanted them to understand that, like, you know, we still live in Columbus. Like, I mean, it's not like they're super fucking far away from,
right,
you know, this is being an opportunity that they could partake in.
Right.
So I wanted them to see, like, you know, if you head down this path, you make those wrong choices, this is the type of shit that you end up in. You end up fighting every day. You end up fucking, yeah, you know, worried about who's around the corner and doing different shit, because that's a reality.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of things, you know, with, you know, inner city youth and people that, you know, sometimes get into the wrong side of the track, so to speak, is, unlike you're a father. It there's a difference between being a dad and being a father. You know, you can be a dad. You're not there. You're there for your kids. And that's hats off to you. I mean, you got a lot of kids. I mean, you could have ran, and I don't want to brag on you, but Jason's a man who, you know, stepped up to a plate, so to speak. I'm not going to say any more, because I know that you don't want that, you know, talked about, but he's a man that stepped up to the plate, and you know, he's a good dad. I've seen him with his kids. And his kids eventually will appreciate everything that he's done for them. They're just kids, and kids can be cruel, and kids can be spiteful and everything. And, you know, a lot of those kids that's portrayed in this movie, I think that a lot of them just needed a dad. They just needed someone to, like, tell them that they're good, tell them that they're great, show them that they can be great. And that's a powerful thing. And when I was watching this movie, I think about my dad often, and it's momentary things of like things that he told me growing up and little things that he taught me, because my parents got divorced when I was three. So I didn't spend a lot of time with my dad growing up. But the times that I did, he took, you know, the time to kind of, you know, be a father and be and show me how to, you know, be a man and stand on my own two feet and do the right things. But I thought about a conversation that I had with my father about a week before he passed away. And my dad died in a car accident. He didn't die on a hospital bed. And he, we're standing on his porch, and he was just like, out of the blue, he never got sentimental. He was just like, you know, me and your mom never had to worry about your kids. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, we never had to worry about drugs. We never had to worry about gangs. We never had to worry about you getting in trouble with the law. He's like, you know, I'm like, what's all this? Where are you coming from with all this? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, I just been thinking about it. And I just wanted to, you know, say that, you know, I was proud of you. I'm like, get out of here, you weirdo. I didn't even, you know, cause my dad just wasn't that guy. So when he got mushy like that, I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, okay. But in hindsight, you know, a week later he passed away, and I'm just like, God, it was almost like he knew. It was almost like he knew he wasn't going to be there and he needed to tell me some stuff. And I thought about him watching this, and I'm like, man, I'm like, these kids just, like, I almost felt like I took my dad for granted at times because he wanted to be in my life and he wanted to be a dad. And it was just, you know, him and my mom couldn't get along. And that's, you know, it kind of caused that separation. But these kids, from the looks of whatever they were portraying on this film, they just didn't seem like they had a father figure in their lives that would, you know, that would stand up for them and hug them and tell them that they're good. And that's what was really great about this movie, is like you felt for these kids, but you also wanted to see them succeed. You wanted to see them better themselves. And I love that about this movie. So I really thought about my dad a lot in this movie. And like I said, it got emotional a couple of times. Like, I'm like, geez, I haven't really thought about my dad like this much in a long time. So it was great to watch in that retrospect of things.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, there's really only like two fathers that they really show in this movie, and one's not really a father, he's like a boyfriend, and he gets shot right in the beginning. And then the only other dad that they really show is that kid's girlfriend's father,
right?
And he's more than stepped up to the plate as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he said, you know, I want a better life for my daughter.
Right.
And as a father, I have three daughters. I completely understand. Like, yeah, you know, I get it. But, you know, I also felt that it was admirable that he still took the time to say, like, you know what, this is who she wants to be with. I'm going to give him that benefit of the doubt, because there are people pulling for him saying, like, hey, he isn't a bad person, he just needs a chance, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he gave him that chance. And if you look at when he finally shows up at that last game or whatever, yeah, he's rooting for him and he's cheering, right, him on and stuff. And to me, that, you know, that really hit me kind of hard, was mm-hmm. seeing her boyfriend's dad in the stands kind of rooting for him,
right?
Because it was like, you know what, when this is all said and done, maybe he will have a support system, and right, maybe he will have it in her boyfriend's dad.
Right.
Or his girlfriend's dad.
Right.
And so that kind of was good to see. And the only other real, you know, male adult figure that you get in this movie are like the Rock's character and, mm-hmm. and Exhibit's character. And
well, you can even say the main guy, because they kind of, the football team kind of takes him in and is like, hey, throw me a pass. And I think we just kind of got focused on the Rock and Exhibit's character, because they were kind of the focal points of the coaching staff. But the other guys seemed to kind of, you know, care too about the kids.
They definitely cared about the kids, but I think part of it
was the relationship aspect of things definitely goes to the Rock and Exhibit.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I get what you're saying, but like I said, I think that all of those kids from a perspective thing is that they respected the other two back players as well. Enough to be like, okay, you're stepping up to the plate for us. And like I said, it changed.
Yeah, they were.
It changed them too, because the one guy who didn't want jack shit to do with the football team and was sabotaging it from the inside out. At first, at the end, he's like, okay, what if we can guarantee there'll be no problems? Like, he's officially seen the light and is on board. And it's such a great little moment in the movie, because he's the guy you didn't think would be the one to step up to the plate and make that final game happen. So it's got levels, man. It doesn't even have layers. It's got levels to this movie. It's really, it takes you on a ride. And that's one of the greatest things about storytelling, is that when you can just keep people enthralled in the movie, no matter what, you can just sit back and you can just be like, okay, I'm invested in these characters and this story. And that's what makes a great movie.
The other thing that I really liked about it, from just like a football fan's perspective, is the football in this movie is really well done. Like, you get the games are really, really well shot. I think that the plays are really well done. I like the fact that we got a good, while they were telling a very much bigger than football story, using football as kind of the catalyst for it, we still got a really strong amount of football that was actually being shown in it too. So if you came into it just wanting a sports movie, you got your fill. You just got a whole hell of a lot more than you bargained for in a positive way.
Yeah. This movie is only about, this movie's 75%, you know, youth, I don't want to say Cinderella story, a youth upcomings, and about 25% football.
Yeah.
That because, like I said, I didn't go into it thinking this was a sports movie. I went into it thinking that it's going to be a story that has sports. You know, I know if I sit down and I watch Major League, I know I'm getting a sports movie because it's from start to finish sports. The Sandlot is a movie about baseball, but it's also about friendship and growing up and being a team and a lot of other things that go on in the Sandlot. So this is kind of the same thing. It has a Sandlot type of feel to it.
As a name drop, we've actually covered the Sandlot on here.
We have, and I just watched the Sandlot this week because it's baseball.
As you season. Fucking should. As yeah. You always should watch the Sandlot.
Yeah, the Sandlot is one of the greatest movies of all time. It just happens to be a baseball movie.
Yeah, it is, in my opinion, the best baseball movie of all time. But again, I agree with you. It is one of the greatest movies of all time. Yeah. The movie's just, it is one of those movies that, like, if you're flipping through the channels and you're like, man, I really want to watch like an action movie, or I really want to
watch, stop on the Sandlot.
And the Sandlot pops up, you're like, fuck it. Like, I guess I'm watching the Sandlot.
Nah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't even matter where you start in the Sandlot. You could be at the end and you're going to watch that final scene of the Sandlot.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You can put that movie on anytime. And I just bought the 25th or 30th anniversary Blu-ray edition of the Sandlot. And I already own it, but that's how much I love that movie. And again, me and my dad went and watched that movie when I was a kid. So, like I said, again, this movie has that Sandlot type of feel to it. And if I have problems with this movie, I have problems with the camera work in this movie at times. There was a lot of like focus in, focus out shots real fast. And like, it's something that like really bugs me about movies. Like, they would like focus in on like the rock and then pull out and then look. I was like, what the hell is going on with this cameraman today? But there, you know, there are problems with that. That would be like my biggest issue with the movie. And sometimes how it was filmed, like it felt like it was like guerrilla style, like, felt like a handheld camera from like the early 2000s. Like, someone just had like a tripod and was like running around with it. The football scenes kind of felt filmed like that too. And the, you know, but they also slowed them down and they made the classic like slow motion. You know, they did a good job filming the football scenes. They didn't really get hokey with those. I think the only other problem I have with this movie is it's towards the end, and it's when that linebacker it throws that racial slur right at that kid. It almost felt unnecessary. I get what its point was, but it felt like it was after all of those hits he had been laying on that kid at that in that one moment, he has to throw the racial slur out there. I didn't leave a good taste in my mouth on that screenwriting aspect of things.
Yeah, and I wonder, that's one of those things that I wonder if they put that in there because it was true. And if so, then yeah, I understand why you keep that in there, because if it's true, then you want to show him, you want to show that as a true thing. And then the beauty of him getting his comeuppance in that like very next opportunity is fantastic. But I agree with you on that too, because it was one of the
random. It's just like, so for anyone, spoiler alerts, if anybody hasn't seen this movie, basically this running back that plays for the Gridiron Gang, the Mustangs, he keeps getting basically just destroyed by this middle linebacker from this high school. Every time they've played, this kid has just mauled this kid, and he can't get his upcomings on this linebacker. Kid is just throwing him into the sidelines, rubbed his face in the dirt, basically, and he's talked trash over him every time. Well, the last time before the running back from the Mustang scores the winning touchdown, dude does it again, but this time he throws the racial slur out there. And it's the only every other time he's just talked trash, like, I'm coming for you, you know, I'm here all day, you know, typical football linebacker stuff. And I'm sure stuff like that has happened in football games before. But for this perspective of the movie, he just, bam, it's right there. And I was just like, what? That was just unneeded.
Yeah, it definitely, it was one of the few moments, because, you know, I was one of those moments where I had to pause the movie and be like, hey, you know, I had to explain to the kids,
right,
like, hey, this is what,
unfortunate that the kids had to watch this and have to hear that, and then you have to explain it. But it's good at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it provided me with an opportunity to showcase, you know, a wrong. And right. and for that, I guess, grateful, because now, I mean, it's not like they ever run into that. So
right.
It gave me an opportunity to be like, hey, here's what's going on in this is why this is wrong.
Right.
So, you know, right. In that regard, it was.
No, I know. And I 110% agree that that's what you should have done. But I just, like I said, that for me just kind of left a really bad taste in my mouth. Like screenwriting wise, I think that you could have done without it and made the same point in the scene.
Oh yeah.
Even if it was factual and it happened in real life, I still think that you could have just, you know, he could have talked trash to him again, like, you ain't getting past me or whatever, you know, but you didn't need to say.
Yeah. That. And I think the running back's from like a Christian school too, which made it even more like,
right.
It was even more like, whoa.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, this movie is top notch. Other than, like, I said, a few things.
Middle linebacker, not the running back.
Yeah. It's top. This movie's top notch other than those few things. But you want to get into some favorites here, sir?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do favorite scene. I'll go first. I'll get the party started on this one. My favorite scene is the scene where the Rock's character gets suited up and brings he's like, we're not leaving here till you run me over. And, you know, the team starts to rally behind the kid, not because of the hatred because at first they hated the guy, but because they wanted to see him succeed. And it's two points in one, where the Rock could see the greatness in the kid, and he just had to get him over that fear of getting hit or hitting people. But he had to make him angry enough at him to make him want to do it. So he just kept making him do it and do it and do it. And finally, the kid had succeed. And when he did, it was like, he got all of that anger out of him that he had towards the Rock's character, and the team rallied behind him and made him feel, even his mortal enemy within the team that he had was kind of like cheering him on too, like not hesitantly either. He was kind of like, yeah, you can do it, you run him over, because he wanted to see him basically run over the Rock's character. So I really love that scene because it's really intense, but it also has a great little point to it as well.
Yeah, there's four scenes in this movie that keep sticking out to me, and so I'm trying to like narrow it down, but I'll name them real quick. But like the scene where they give the Rock's flowers for his mom,
that was man, you want to talk about gut wrenching?
That shit
hits. Like I'm a grown man, and I am not afraid to say that. Like I welled up, just ever so slightly welled up with tears, because number one, everybody was in on it, including the other teacher. Mm-hmm. And so those kids had to find out from somebody else that his mom was sick. So right. They took it upon themselves to basically, say, to someone else, can you go out and get us a card and some flowers for his mom?
Right.
Yeah. And then everybody signed it. And then like, I think even the Rock in that scene, as a human being, was like he, I don't know if that was necessarily acting. It was a really good scene. Cause I was like, oh, it's dusty in my house right now. It is dusty. I was like, I need to do some spring cleaning because it is dusty in here. But
the follow up where they're reading the card, that hits you a little bit even too. Oh,
when he's reading next to his mom.
Uh-huh. And she's like, they're good kids, you know what I mean? And he's like, yeah, they are, you know, like that shit was a heavy hitter. The other one, this is a kind of small, but along the same lines of what you were talking about earlier with the Rock's suiting up scene, where they decide that they want water and that they're not getting up, and they all kind of unify. It's a very small thing where they just are basically rebellious, but they're rebellious together.
It's the first time they acted like a team.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of cool. The other scenes that stick out to me, these are probably the ones that are my actual two favorite. I really like the scene where the one running back's former gang members show up at the thing, and then they start rushing the field, and they're about to shoot that guy. And then he kind of defends him, and he defends him because he'd kind of grown a relationship and a bond with him that was bigger than the gang shit that he was dealing with.
Right.
And that was, you know, it's a really incredibly touching scene. And the kids in the scene do a phenomenal job of acting through it. You believe every second of it, and every emotion is felt so strongly in that scene.
Yeah.
And then the final scene that I would say is probably my actual favorite is they've decided that the team is no longer a thing. And then the Rock, you know, the kids go out and practice themselves. Mm-hmm. And they suit up for practice themselves, and Junior's leading the practice and whatnot. And then, you know, you get the faculty comes out and whatever, and then they're like, you know what, we are able to continue the season or whatever. But that scene really hit, because it was like, you know what, it showed that he had made such an impact that, you know, even whether he was there or not, they were still a team.
Yeah.
That was, and there's a lot of really incredible scenes in this movie.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, like I said, it's got a lot of like Sandlot feel to it. Even like when he's like, for every pass you complete, I'll fill that. I'll put an ounce of water in that pool.
Yeah,
and then the pool. There's just a scene where you just see him running towards the pool, and they're kids. You can see they're kids for a change, and they're having fun.
The one kid fakes drowning and then kisses the life. Oh no, wait, that is
that. Yeah, no, that That's the Sandlot. I'm talking about when they pulled in, you know, they pulled in the rock, you know, like he faked like he had something in his eye and then he pulled in the mm-hmm. rock. But you could see the joy on their faces, like they were just kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is, like, when you're watching this movie, you almost think that they're like hardened criminals because some of them have like gang tattoos and, you know, they've been on the streets and you almost think they're like grown men. But then you start to realize like these are kids. And that one scene, it's a very powerful scene, but it's nothing much. They're just running towards the pool and then they get in the pool and they're just jumping around and splashing around and having fun and they're getting to be kids.
Yeah.
Because none of these kids had an opportunity to be kids.
Yeah. Yeah, now that is a powerful one as well.
So moving on. It is favorite quote.
You know what?
Favorite quote, Jason?
There's so many. I know there's a lot of like great speeches that are in this.
Yes.
So it's kind of it's I don't know, it's kind of tough. I'm gonna go with there's a line that said that then let's try the impossible because possible just ain't working. I like that line a lot. I think it kind of showcases that, you know, this is what is expected of these kids is that they're going to, you know, keep repeating and you know, they end up in, you know, dead or in prison. And that's what they showcase it, you know, that's the facts that they present to you. And so that's what's possible for these kids. So let's instead try what's impossible and see what we can change.
Yeah, I think that I remember that line specifically. I was like, man, that's super powerful as far as like just a one-liner goes. Like we've done impossible. Why don't we do possible for a change? And that is just, it's a great little thing to say. And the thing about like Dwayne Johnson is he has a lot of those motivational like sayings. Like when I watch him on his Instagram and, you know, he talks about, you know, the three things in the gym, it's blood, tears, and respect. And he's like, two you give, one you earn. Like it's a very, he's got very powerful sayings because of, you know, his number one, his background and being around wrestling and his heritage and things that he's grown up with. So when he grew up in lines like, what's that?
And he grew up in
football. Yeah, and he grew up in football too. And to like hear him say things like that, it almost sounds like a wrestling promo, but it also really kind of hits home, you know. Anybody who's thinking that something's impossible, well, let's try possible. So it's a very powerful line that's thrown in there. And I'm not trying to sit here and kiss the Rock's ass or anything, but like sometimes when I watch his shit on Instagram, I'm like, God, I just want to go lift weights. Like he kind of motivates the fuck out of me.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the few people that I can honestly say, like, you know, there's 100 fucking celebrities and, you know, and a ton of fucking athletes out there. But he's one of the few people that has that, and I mean, he bleeds charisma, but he has that charisma that and that attitude that, like, when he tells you that you can believe in yourself, you fucking believe it. Like, there's something about it that you're like, you know what, I fucking can. I can do this because, like, if you say that I can do it, then I can fucking do it. Like, I can, like, and you feel that in yourself. So, yeah, I 100% get you on that.
Well, you know, it also helps that Dwayne, from all perspectives that I've ever seen, is a super nice guy.
is yeah, just I've literally never seen anything to
come. It's just like I watched a video one time where he like he's on his Instagram and he said, "All right, I had to turn around." He's like, "I had to turn around because these girls were standing on the side of the road with signs, and I had to turn around and drive back just to say hi to them." Like, he didn't have to do that.
Right.
But he probably made their entire lives by doing that and probably taking some pictures and probably signing some autographs. And he'd probably just come from the grocery store or the gym or wherever. And he's driving home. And he saw him on the side of the road. And he was like, you know what? Take 5 minutes out of your day. And I've read interviews and I've seen him talk and I've seen him, you know, say things like, I used to be that kid. I used to be that kid who was in awe of these, you know, I grew up around wrestlers, but I was still in awe. He's like, and to take the 5 minutes out of their time to talk to me was like, so great. He's, you know, he's talked about those experiences. So again, like knowing his personality through his social media, like I feel like he's a really good dude, but I mean, I don't know him personally, but just to see him, yeah, I don't see anybody ever say a bad word about the Rock, even wrestlers. You know, and wrestlers, they have tendency, someone has a tendency to be like, oh, Dwayne, and they'll say nice things about him while stabbing him in the back at the same time. But never heard anybody say anything bad about Dwayne at all.
Yeah.
But that brings us to favorite performances. I don't think this is a hard one. I think this is Dwayne Johnson all the way. I think that he kills it. I think he kills it as this was a very serious role, probably one of his first serious roles. Cause there's points in this movie where he has to get emotional and you have to feel for him. And you know, he does a really good job and his acting really got better.
Well, and he's smaller in this movie too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know what Dwayne's eating at his house, but Jesus Christ. Yeah, and he's training for the Black Adam movie, and he's just jacked beyond belief right now.
I'm so sad that he is working with DC, because it's like if the physical appearance that he has and the personality that he has to go along with it and all of the things that he has. And then you've got Warner Brothers that is just notorious for fucking shit up when it comes to superhero characters. And I feel like, granted, the only other movie that Dwayne has been involved in for DC was really fucking good, but it's still like, do they deserve him? Like, do they fucking deserve to have, like...
But let me throw this curveball at you. Could Dwayne be the guy that turns the DC curve where it starts, the pendulum starts to shift?
I mean, I hope so. I thought so, because when I watched Shazam, which is the movie that he produced and helped bring out, I was like, okay, like, all right, we are doing something here.
Cooking with fire now, right?
Yeah, we are making something that is worth watching, and this is supposed to continue that same thing. But he also had recently jumped on to the Restore the Snyderverse too, so hopefully, I don't know, who knows.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I think the best performance goes to The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I think this is one of his earliest movies, and I think this is one of the movies that shows the greatest strength of his like emotional range. There's not a whole lot. He doesn't have a whole lot of movies that I can think of that are more in his more recent career that have quite the emotions that this one has. So I think that this does a good job of showcasing that while this is not the type of movies The Rock is making right now, he's very capable of of having the necessary range to carry an emotional movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm trying to go through the list of things that he's done over the course of time. And I think that because he did, you know, he did The Mummy Returns, and then he did, you know, little bit parts here and there, and then The Rundown, Walking Tall, Be Cool, Doom, Southland Tales, and then Gridiron Gang. And I'm looking, and like, this doesn't look like, you know, anything else that he's done is not too emotional. And like serious in the sense of like, you know, a tearjerker movie or a feel good movie. Fast and Furious, he's done a lot of action movies. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, this was a step away from things that he wasn't used to, and I think he did a phenomenal job at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, now it's ratings time. I'll go first since it was the movie that I had to watch. I'm going to give this movie a 9. This movie is a 9. And I'm sure there are people out there who'd be like, a 9, really? Go watch the movie. It other than some camera work and one particular scene that I wasn't a fan of, everything else about this movie is great. Everything else.
Yeah, I am.
And if the camera work was a lot better in it, I'd give it a 10. I mean, I can forgive the other scene. I mean, I really can. But the camera work was a little shoddy for me. And you know, trying to be fair with everything, it's a 9, and that's a high rating.
Yeah, to me, there's one of the kids acting kind of steps out to me as not being that great. And unfortunately, he's one of the focal points of the movie. The kid that is from the rival gang, I never really felt like his acting was all that strong. He did a whole lot of just making the same face throughout most of the movie. That's just most of what we got out of his character.
Right.
And so I felt like there could have been a much better performance.
Yeah. No, I understand. I get it.
So for me, I'm also going to give it a 9, because I think that had that been the kind of performance that we really could have gotten out of it,
yeah,
then this movie could have very easily been a 10. Sure. and been right up there with you know The Sandlot and be that, yeah, kind of a huge quality movie.
Right. No, I get that.
And again, some camera work, you know, like you said.
Yeah, it was just like, I'm for the type of film that it was, I didn't think that camera work was necessary. And that was the thing. It was like, my mind was like, this isn't necessary camera work. Like, you don't need to have this guerrilla style looking camera work. Like, it's just kind of unnecessary. And that was like, it throws me off. So that was the whole thing. Like, and I wasn't thinking about it the whole time I was watching the movie. It just, when it happened and it was obvious, I was like, was it needed?
Yeah, I can understand. But yeah.
But let's move on to segment 2. What do you say, Jason?
Sounds like a plan to me.
All right. Folks, stay with us for segment 2 after a few words from here. Us here at Know Your Cinema Podcast and Anchor. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening and supporting Know Your Cinema Podcast. If you like what you hear in this episode, please check out our vast library of over 60 episodes covering a wide variety of films from comedy, action, horror, and everything in between. You can listen to the show on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcast. Also check out our social media platforms for fan polls and interaction with all the hosts of Know Your Cinema Podcast. Give us a like at Facebook at Know Your Cinema Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at KYC Podcast. And now, without any further ado, back to the show.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema Podcast. This is segment two. This is the Get to Know Your Cinema section of our podcast. And in this segment, we usually do a question or we play vaguely name that movie. But this week, we're going to just go ahead and ask a question and probably take up the majority of time with that. So, Jason, it is your week with the question. What do you got for us this week, buddy?
Okay, so you are instructed to create an Easter movie, okay, from a studio. And they want it to rival a Christmas movie. They want it to be that big of a deal, but for Easter. What's your movie about? Who's in it? Whatever you want, whatever information you want to give me in regards to this movie.
Wow. That's interesting. I'm not an Easter fan. I'm not a fan of the holiday itself. I hate Easter candy. I'm not the biggest fan of Easter ham. So this one's a hard question for me because I'm not in. If this was Christmas, maybe. If this was even St. Patrick's Day, I'd probably have a better idea of what I could come up with. But Easter's a little different, so I would do something with like an action movie that had to do with like Easter, kind of like along the lines of like Die Hard. Like it's like an Easter, like it's like Die Hard. Some people will tell you Die Hard's a Christmas movie, and some people will tell you that it's not, and those people will tell you that it's not as wrong. So I'd probably do something around like an action movie. I don't know exactly what that would be. Maybe like Boondock Saints 3 or something. Okay. Like the Easter version.
Easter Boondock Saints.
This is a hard question. I don't want to go super religious. I mean,
in Normandy party and feeling a spirit at Easter.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go overly religious with the film. Because it's been done a lot over the years with Easter.
So, yeah, and I think the problem with that is you only reach a certain audience with that.
Right.
You're not going to get, like, if you're going to tell the story, right, you're only going to get this audience. You're not going to get, like, a we need to watch it like we watch Die Hard or The Grinch. Or
Maybe a terrorist organization takes over, like a big church. Okay. And, like, somebody has to save them.
Okay, John McClane is.
Yeah, I mean it's a Die Hard premise. But it's Easter Sunday, so like it's one of the biggest church days of the year. So there's a lot of people, there's a lot of hostages, so to speak.
Okay, so they've taken it over in it's the hostage situation.
Yeah. Okay. So, but there's always like that one guy who's like the ex-military guy that's in the, you know, there with his family and. You know, is, you know, like the John, like Die Hard situation where he's in the bathroom and then all of a sudden the guys bust in. And
how about this? How about here's what it is. Okay. I like where we're going, but we're going to do this together. We're going to teammate this one. Okay. So it's the Vatican, right? So these terrorists have taken over the Vatican because the Vatican has an unbelievable amount of knowledge stored within its vaults, which is actually factual, right? And this terrorist organization thinks that the key
should actually make it the whole city. You should make it Vatican City,
right? Yeah, that's fine. They take over Vatican City, okay? And because this terrorist organization believes that the key to everlasting life exists in the vault of the Vatican. Okay. So then
what is this, like National Treasure 3 or something?
It's like National Treasure meets
Die Hard.
meets Die Hard, but with the Expendables, right? So then the Expendables, led by Tom Hanks's character from the Dan Brown books. Yeah. have to go in and because he understands the parts of the Vatican.
I got you way better.
Okay.
So we gotta have it's gotta be Tom Hanks and Mel Gibson.
Oh God.
And to throw a curveball in there, we gotta throw in, I gotta find his name though. These are all guys that have done something around the realm of religion and Jesus. William Dafoe.
That's who I was thinking.
Make him like the terrorist guy. Make him the heel.
I was thinking William Dafoe is a perfect heel. He just like the face that he has. You're just like, okay, like I get it. I absolutely love William Dafoe. He's just fantastic. And I said Willem.
We can have William Dafoe's cronies. We can have them be Jim Caviezel.
Jim Caviezel.
He played Jesus in the Passion of the Christ.
Jesus. We'll have Jesus be a crony.
William Dafoe. William Dafoe played Jesus in a movie in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Okay.
Yeah, this we have Jim Caviezel as a crony. We can have Ewan McGregor as one of the heroes too, since he played Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan looks like Jesus.
And then Jared Leto, because a lot of people think Leto looks like Jesus also. I've actually seen recent like TikToks where this guy replaced a picture of Jesus in his grandma's house with a picture of Jared Leto, and now she prays to him. So that's our ragtag bunch of heroes right there, and they're doing expendable style trying to rescue Vatican City.
We got to make Mel Gibson and Tom Hanks the heroes.
Yeah, no, the other guys are like the other two are kind of like sideline characters of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love
it. It's all people who have played or look like Jesus.
Yeah, and they're all in. Yeah, this is, I would watch this movie.
It's like Tom Hanks is like he's like the everyday guy, and Mel Gibson's like the old Marine that's like, or old like Green Beret that's grizzled.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is like the brains and Mel Gibson's like the brawn.
They bring Tom Hanks in because he knows, he has like an intimate relationship with the Vatican or some shit like that. Like he knows.
Like the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, like the Da Vinci Code. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to get you in there. And then like, he's like, why? He's never touched a gun before, naturally, because that's, you know, Tom Hanks is. And then like, there's like a pivotal scene where like fucking Mel Gibson's like, look, you're going to fucking take this gun. He's like, I'm not taking a gun. Like, thou shall not kill. And he's like, fucking take the gun. And he like pushes it into his chest and he's like, I'm not going to fucking kill anybody. He's like, listen, it's either we go in here and we finish off these terrorists, or they get the secrets that are in that vault. And you don't want them finding out what's in that vault and putting that out there and desecrating all of these things. And then you get that fucking scene where he goes in and he's like, he's reluctant, but he's like, fuck it. And then like Mel Gibson's about to get shot and you can see the camera right over his shoulder. Mel Gibson's about to get shot. He's got a gun to the back of his head, but he doesn't know it yet. And then boom. And you hear the shot fired because you don't see it. You don't see You think Mel Gibson just got shot in the back of the head and we're like, oh, fuck. But nope. Tom Hanks pulled out that fucking revolver. Boom. Popped one in that terrorist's ass and broke that 10th commandment to save Mel Gibson to make sure that their plan went off without a hitch.
We have to have a huge sword fight with you and McGregor. And let's get the guy that played Darth Maul.
I'd watch that. Yeah. They find.
Don't I know you?
Yeah, they're just like on the wall or whatever. Like they're like,
the Vatican door raises and like he's standing there and he's got like two swords instead of one.
Yeah.
And McGregor's like, I know you from somewhere?
McGregor just emptied his last bullet before he walked in the door, and then there comes Darth Maul's, the guy that played Darth Maul, just standing there with two swords. He's like, all right, well, fuck it. And then he throws his gun down and he sees that there's like another fucking sword and he's like, all right, guess it's game on.
Yeah. But can we let the guy who plays Maul win this time?
Oh, yeah. Like, Ewan McGregor gets, like, he gets, like, fucking, he gets chopped in half.
He's Qui-Gon Jinn in this one.
Yeah, he gets Qui-Gon Jinn in it.
Yeah, he's fodder. He's fodder in this one. I like it.
I'd fucking watch this movie.
I think it would pop people if it was like the surprise. Like the door raises and Ewan McGregor standing there, and then you see the guy who played Darth Maul, and he's just in like a black suit with gloves and he's got two swords. Everybody be like, he pulls out one and then he pulls out another.
Yeah, like maybe he's got like a cloak on, and then like you see like the one sword pop out of the cloak.
Got a hoodie.
And then
hoodie.
I'm thinking full on like duster cloak. So the first one goes off and you see the one sword, and then his other arm comes out, cloak falls down, he's got two fucking swords, and you're like, shit, Ewan McGregor's about to have to fight Darth Maul one more again.
I'm just saying, I think it would just be funny if he's like, I know you from somewhere.
The hell is familiar.
You look funny.
You used to have spikes.
You just give him spiked hair.
Yeah, you have to spike your hair. That'd be good. Maybe all the terrorists are like a weird,
they can't hit nothing. Like they're shooting and they can't hit nothing.
Yeah, all the ones that are around Darth Maul's character can't hit shit.
I love it.
Tell me this movie doesn't. This is it.
This movie's idea is going to be stolen, and we're going to be sitting here with our thumbs in our butts going, damn it, we came up with that. And we're going to have a fat lawsuit.
We will, because we've got that right here. We've got that. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
It's out here.
Let us know. Find us on social media and let us know if you'd watch this movie. Like, this is fire right here.
I think this is a fantastic movie. What can we call it? Fucking like trying to think. Do we do an Easter title?
Well, I mean, there's not much you can do like
Good Friday.
Easter Sunday.
Yes, Good Friday.
Palm Sunday.
They Vatican can't stop them. We need a good title for this movie, because I'd watch this movie. I'd go see this in a heartbeat.
Pope Fiction.
That's it. Sold.
Pope Fiction.
Sold to the highest bidder.
Pope Fiction.
Matter of fact, we could even get, you know, he'd even be a fucking fantastic director for it. Tarantino.
So over the top.
It'd be insane. It'd be
let me just find him on Twitter and see if I could just pitch him this idea.
It would be
bro, nuts. Hear me out.
Right. I either want him or Kevin Smith to direct this movie.
Well, those are like my two favorite directors.
Or Rodriguez.
Where's Vivian when we need him to bust in with the Christopher Nolan reference?
Like, well, you know,
Christopher Nolan would kill this movie.
He would probably knock this one right out of the park.
It'll be an Academy Award winning movie.
This movie would be right up there with The Dark Knight if we had him do it.
Actually, he'd probably be yelling at us right now for referencing Mel Gibson.
Right. Well, we didn't talk about any kind of erections involved.
Well, he's never coming back on again now.
Right. Sorry, Viv.
That's an inside joke.
What if right at the beginning of this fucking movie, Mel Gibson's partner is the guy from the other guy from
all I heard was part. I was like, whoa, how we're starting out with this with a dong shot?
It's no opening scene, Mel Gibson's dick. Okay,
hear me out, Quentin. First scene. We focus in on a very grizzled Mel Gibson and his old gray bushed dick.
If we want Tarantino to sell it, if we want to sell it to Tarantino,
his feet.
All right, Tarantino. We start with Mel Gibson's naked feet, and then we slowly work up.
We should drag Cameron Diaz out of retirement to be a female in this movie. We need a female.
We should put. I think Donald Glover should die in this movie and be like, "I told you I was too old for this shit."
Danny Glover.
I said Donald Glover.
I was like, whoa.
No, we should have Danny Glover die in this movie and have him tell you I was too old. I told you I was too old.
I mean, we could have Donald Glover show up and say, this is the Vatican.
This is the Vatican. He's a tour guide.
This is the Vatican.
That shit would be fucking so good. I love Donald Glover so much, but that would be funny as fuck.
He could be the narrator, and we could just be like, he could just show up and randomly be like, this is the Vatican. These are terrorists.
These are terrorists. That's a good, that would be, I would watch the fuck out of this movie. Pulp Fiction.
I'm gonna pitch Tarantino right now. Bro, hear me out.
Listen. I know you were doing 10 movies. I got one for you.
What about we make this one the 10th one?
Yeah. I got your coup de grace.
Yeah, I got your curtain call, buddy.
If you make this film, they won't even let you make additional movies.
Oh. Jeez, the stupid ideas that we come up with. But yeah, seriously, let us know if you'd watch this movie. If we decide to sit down and write, like, it's like National Lampoon's The Vatican.
I'm just know your cinema presents.
Chevy Chase the Pope?
I don't know. That's a dangerous move. Now, putting Mel Gibson in this movie was dangerous. We start putting Chevy Chase as the Pope. We are sliding down a slope.
Let's do it.
But I'm in. I'm in. I'm already in. I'm on board.
We're already talking about spoofing the entire episode one of Star Wars, the fight scene at the end of Star Wars. George Lucas about to sue someone.
Actually, we're fucking up Disney's shit now. They own that motherfucker now.
Two completely different characters. Only if we shot it frame by frame would be awesome.
I mean, honestly, I think we could shoot it frame for frame, and it wouldn't matter.
We changed the ending. Like, this guy won.
He gets cut in half in this movie. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. In your movie, he's got a red face with spikes and laser blades. In our movie. He's got two swords.
Completely different. Way different.
And he wins.
Right.
He gets because to be in the next have. Movie like he should have been.
Exactly. Yep.
I can't think of that guy's name. All I know is did you ever watch Fanboys?
Yeah.
That scene when he busted out the two batons, it popped me.
You know what I think would be great though? If any, I think Willem Dafoe would sign on to this movie and Mel Gibson. I think Tom Hanks would be very apprehensive, but I think we could get Willem Dafoe.
I could just, you know, I mean, we just pitch it to Tom. We just be like, look, it's like the Da Vinci Code, only over in left field.
It's like if the Da Vinci Code.
All you have to do is be a brain. All you have to do is be a, you have to be a guy who knows computers and hacking, and you work for whoever, and you don't only have to fire a gun once, and you get all the good cheesy one-liners.
You can even have him say, like, you are a child's plaything.
We're just, mama said, we'll just make him do, let's make him do lines as a normal person from Forrest Gump. Watch that. Like he comes into, like he runs into a scene. And he's like, I was running.
What if every single line that Tom Hanks says is a quote from a different movie of his?
Like we make, Mel Gibson's character's name Wilson.
Yeah.
Wilson!
That's the scene, like right before he's about to get shot, he screams, Wilson! And then we hear the gunshot, and then that's when Tom Hanks shoots the other guy. That's the scene right there.
I'm for it. I'm all for it.
This movie's shaping up. Yeah. Yeah, let us know, because I'll sit down and write the screenplay.
Pope Fiction.
Pope Fiction.
I don't know if Tarantino will go. I don't know if Tarantino will go for that one. Like, look, it's Pope Fiction. Not Pulp Fiction. It's Pope Fiction.
All right. Yeah, well, let us know. Let us know.
All right, Jason, do you have the wheel ready?
I certainly do, sir.
Awesome. So this week we watched Gridiron Gang. We are going to replace Gridiron Gang on my side of the wheel with what?
I'm going to replace it with Aquaman.
Okay. So, for those folks just tuning in, on Jason's side of the wheel, we have Top Gun, Machete, JFK, Phantasm 2, and Smokey and the Bandit. On my side of the wheel, we have Moana, Sharknado. He just added Aquaman, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, and the movie Trolls. Jason, without any further ado, would you like to spin that wheel, sir?
Certainly.
All right.
Right. We are watching Machete.
Machete. Awesome.
Machete.
Looking forward to this movie for a while. But, folks, you know, next week we're going to be watching. What is our bonus episode next week, sir?
Actually, our bonus episode this week would be Thor the Dark World.
Thor Dark World. So, Thursday we're going to be watching, reviewing Thor Dark World. And then next week on Tuesday, we will be reviewing Machete. So, for us here at Know Your Cinema Podcast, we do like to leave you with our favorite sayings. Mine comes from my best friend. When the Minnesota Twins would be losing a baseball game, he would always look at me and say, all is right in the world today. I knew exactly what he meant. And for you folks, I leave you with, all is right in the world today.
I always like to end with my favorite movie quote that I try to live my life by, which is, never take life too seriously because you'll never make it out alive.
All right, folks. Thursday, we're going to be reviewing Thor the Dark World. And then next Tuesday, Machete. Until then, we'll see you.